Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is Truth Finder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give Truth Finder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing, but you got to click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Profiling Evil Podcast. I'm Mike King, and tonight I have a special guest with me, a colleague from my real job, Chris Delaney. Chris, how you doing?
Good, Mike. Thanks for having us on today.
Well, it's a pleasure. I want to introduce Justin Collins. Justin is a police officer and has a remarkable organization that we're going to spend some time talking about today. But I wanted to first start off and have Justin tell us a little bit about his background, who you are, Justin, how long you've been in law enforcement, and we'll talk about the organization in a minute, but just give us a feel for your background.
All right, well, my name's Justin Collins. I'm working on my 18th year with the Rochester Police Department. I'm currently a sergeant there, where my primary responsibility is my employees and I manage all of our blue light cameras in the city. So we have about 175 cameras that we manage throughout the city to spot crime, and we assist other different sections and units throughout the city with investigations. A little bit about myself. I grew up in Buffalo, New York. Single parent home for most of my life. Always wanted to be a police officer, probably since I was a little kid. Was a major struggle to get on the job. First couple written tests, I didn't do too well. And even after I passed the written exam, I didn't do well on the physical agility. So, there was a lot of times I wanted to quit. Buffalo wouldn't give me a chance, but, I got my shot in Rochester. And when I got my shot, I made a commitment that I would do the very best that I possibly could do. I'd like to think I've done some of that. I still have a lot of work to do. But what I want to say, and someone asked me this question recently, like talking about my life, first couple years, and Chris can tell you because he knew me then, I was very proactive, made a lot of arrests. I thought the job was all about getting the bad guys. And while, you know, there are definitely some people that need to be arrested, I really saw another mission, and that was to be more of a resource provider and to be a guardian versus a warrior. And I think throughout my career, sometimes that wasn't looked upon favorably by some of my buddies and even by some people who work there. I think my buddies got to know me, but I stuck with that because that's what I believed in. And I think over time, I'd like to think that philosophy gained some fans. But I really, a lot of times throughout my career, felt like the stuff that I was doing was kind of in the minority. People really did not totally agree with that, especially in an urban environment. They felt like more of it was about occupying neighborhoods and, again, like locking up the bad guys. And I want to stress again, there definitely is a time and place for that. But again, that guardian over that warrior mentality was something that I adopted very early on. And like I said, after that first couple of years, I kind of asked myself, like, what is the purpose of this? We could do so much more as police officers and the symbol that we are in the community if we approached it differently. So all the stuff that you see publicly now, I kind of like it, because some of it at least, because I think it's needed.
Well, I really appreciate it. You're under a different banner of scrutiny today than you've ever been. Chris, you and Justin worked together for many years. You were in law enforcement on the analytics side and the technology side before coming to work at the organization where you are today. But why don't you cover a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So Justin and I worked together for a long time. I worked with the Rochester, New York Police Department for 13 years. I started off doing gang intelligence and working as an intelligence analyst in the narcotics unit. Working with Justin and a number of other folks on proactive strategies to combat gang violence. And that sort of eventually evolved into setting up a crime analysis unit that supported not only intelligence work, but also tactical crime pattern analysis and strategic planning. and ultimately resulted in me running a regional crime analysis center that brought in not only looking at crime patterns and trends from the city of Rochester perspective, but also from the broader region around us, which is a metropolitan area of about 1 million people. And then from there, become the director of business intelligence. So driving the CompStat program for the department, but then increasingly facilitating engagement with other community stakeholders. So much like Justin's path, my path started supporting tactical police operations, intelligence gathering, and ultimately landed in a spot where I was trying to help and support the law enforcement agency improve engagement with the community, stakeholders, elected officials, to help improve the transparency of the department, help satisfy the needs of citizens and stakeholders in that community. And a lot of that work that I worked on in that capacity still now kind of remains true in my role today, where now I'm on the other side of the coin working in a technology company and trying to help other law enforcement agencies leverage the data and information that they have, help realize their strategies around transparency and improve community engagement to improve trust and legitimacy for police agencies of the communities that they police. And so, you know, I think we really appreciate having a chance to be on with you today, Mike, to talk about some of the great work that Justin's doing, because as we see across many law enforcement agencies, having a plan and working with the community and the steps that officers are taking to engage the community in more, in ensuring that they're being policed in the ways that they want to be policed is one step of it. The other aspect of it is ensuring that in the employment pipeline, you're getting candidates that are going to reflect the values of your community and that are going to be prepared to be the kind of police officers that communities expect. And so, really excited to work with Justin and talk about some of the work that he's been doing on the side through his program that we're going to talk about today to ensure that people who want to become police officers are prepared to be the kind of modern police officers that communities are increasingly expecting of their sworn personnel for their police agencies.
Well, you know, you're actually hitting it right on the head, and that is modern police officer, because the times are different and the officer today is coming in with a different set of tools, or needs to have a different set of tools than we ever had. You and I have been fortunate, Chris, to travel the world together. We've been able to see the kind of law enforcement in every reach of our globe. And, you know, we're really lucky that we've had that opportunity. I've participated and watched in training, or watched you in training and participated with you in training all around the globe. And it is a problem that exists in every corner of the world, getting qualified police officers. We're going to talk about the police exam career prep program that Justin has created. And Justin, I want you to talk a little bit about why you came up with this program. And as you do, cover some of the staffing challenges that law enforcement's facing today. And I'll tell you, I mean, you look at the news, like in New York City, with them taking away some of the protection that law enforcement had in the past, we're going to continue to see a exodus in some areas of law enforcement and a need to fill those with a new kind of police officer.
Absolutely. So again, thank you for having us on and for this opportunity. And I kind of tipped my hat to what I was saying earlier in regards to, you know, one of the reasons I started it, because it was such a struggle. One of the reasons I started police exam career prep was such a personal struggle for me to get on the job. And there was so many, and I had a decent background, but it was just such a complicated, confusing process. And despite, you know, wanting it and meeting all those measurables, it was very, very difficult and really an unfriendly process. You know, I know they shouldn't just be handing out badges and guns to anyone who's interested. I mean, obviously that's important that they do their due diligence, but, the process was not very welcoming. It was very confusing. It took me about almost 2 years to get hired from start to finish with the agency that I did get hired. I did test for about 4 years, but ultimately the job that I got hired, I think the process took almost 2 years. And, there were many times that I wanted to quit and, that was the start of it. And then once I figured out a system to help myself, to teach myself to pass these exams, to prepare for all the different steps, because you're really on an island when you're preparing for this. Like if you're going to go be the manager at Target, or if you're going to go apply to Facebook to work there or whatever, you're going to go through a series of interviews. They're going to look at your resume and so on. And that's going to be that. This is literally like a lot of stop and go. It's very intrusive, the law enforcement hiring process, again, that it should be. But if you've never applied for an agency like this, you're really not going to understand what a lonely process it is and how there's a lot of ups and downs. And like I said, there was a ton of times that I wanted to quit. So that when I got on the job, I have met a lot of people who were basically casualties of this hiring process. People that were really good people that I felt would have been great, that had this itch, that did service in other ways, that would have been great additions. All different cultures, all different genders, all different types of people that would have been great fit for law enforcement. But again, they were casualties in this hiring process. And I kept hearing the same, and I'm talking about probably hundreds of people, and I kept hearing the same theme. It was very confusing. I wasn't sure why I was disqualified. I wasn't given another option of how I should apply again. Just, you know, 45% of the people locally here will foul that physical agility and have been fouling it for 20 years. They've had that 45%. So you're going to tell me that someone can't do 2 push-ups? That makes them a bad police officer? So the process itself needs an overhaul. But that's not my goal with Police Exam Career Prep. All those experiences made me want to start something to help people, because these are small hills that they need to climb. They weren't major. But again, when you're alone and you're on that island, and there were so many times personally I wanted to quit, it feels like they're major. So I felt like we needed to create something that was personal and that was intimate, that helped continue to push people and keep people engaged for this year and a half to 2 years, 3 years. But it had to be genuine, because if it wasn't genuine, this generation especially is very, very aware when you're full of shit and you're not, it's a cash grab, whether it's not real engagement. They're aware of that. They have a very good antenna for it. And, you know, some folks would tell you from the generation that I probably, when I came on, were there, I'll hear them say, well, if they can't pass the steps, well, then the hell with them. That is a very old mentality that is no longer viable in this industry. Because, for example, when I started, there were 5,000 people that took the Rochester Police Department exam or the Monroe County Sheriff's exam. Now we have about 400 in the city, and you might have 1,000 in the county. Out of that, we'll just say out of that 400, you've got really, you'll have 45% fail the physical agility. So that's automatic. You'll have some of the group in there, 100 or 200 or so, we'll say about 50 of those folks won't even be hireable. Maybe they're blind in one eye. You know, they can still take the test. Maybe they have no hearing. Maybe they have some type of physical deformity. So that's not a true group. Then you'll have some people that will have honestly glaring background issues, which makes them unhireable. I mean, just they're not hireable, right? But they still could take the test. So that number, that 450, is not a true number. And then you'll have some people that are good applicants, but will be on other lists, other places. So they'll take those jobs. So an agency doesn't really have a lot to choose from. So you've got to start to think outside the box. Like, how do we get to this point? There's lots of ways that we've got to this point, but work with a group of people that are interested and make sure they pass these measurables. Make sure they're taking that written test. Make sure they're taking that physical journey and they're preparing for it. And make sure they're staying engaged. Again, I talk about this generation and why I started this group. And I'll tell you, I've had a lot of luck. I couldn't do this alone. My partner, Gina, really runs the day-to-day operations of the group. But I have so many instructors who feel as passionately as I do about helping these kids and who have their own struggles and had their own struggles getting on the job, they've really helped keep this program together. But when you talk about this generation, they need something because there's so many distractions. In 2004, when I started, there was no social media. There was none of these distractions.
You know, one of the things that's obvious to me, Chris, is that Justin is passionate about this topic. And I think about all of the consent decrees that we're seeing across the country, agencies that are really struggling to fill their personnel sworn amounts that they can fill, and trying to get something that's representative of the community that they are in. This is really an incredible challenge if our system is so bogged down with bureaucracy that someone can't apply for a job and get through the process.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and I think as you well know, you know, as we talk to various municipalities around the country, this is a common challenge that keeps coming up over and over again as agencies are seeking to improve the representation and diversity of their police workforces and additionally attract the kind of candidate who, to Justin's point, you know, sees themselves in a guardian rather than a warrior type of role. You know, when you think about those subgroups of population and then you apply them to the kind of ratios that Justin was talking about, the number of candidates that are viable, that are going to fit the kinds of characteristics that you're looking for in a modern police force, it really starts to get quite low fast. And especially when you see what's happening with the job market currently, good candidates are good candidates, and good candidates for policing are good candidates in other industries as well. And the time length process of becoming a police officer is not necessarily amenable to hiring good candidates that are getting offers from other places, unless those individuals are invested in the value and the nobility of the policing profession. And I think that is one of the fundamental challenges that exists currently in policing and police hiring, and is exactly the kind of function that Justin's organization is intended to address, to not only help the individuals who are thinking about becoming police and need a community and a family to help them enable their dreams, but then at the same time, as a feeder mechanism for law enforcement agencies who are looking for candidates who are going to be successful and going to go through that process successfully and are mentally invested in that process coming in to ensure that they will become not only good candidates, but good officers for the type of modern environment and personnel that agency is looking to invest in.
And Justin, as I think through this process and this incredible challenge, you know, I think about the historic and then the current view on what a police officer should look like today. Give me an idea of what today's cop looks like in comparison to when I hired on in 1979.
In my opinion, and I think this is starting to be the general consensus, that a police officer, again, is that guardian, is that person that can provide those resources, today's police officer, to the community. It's someone who's empathetic, someone who is, just regardless of race, is someone who's sensitive to all cultures and all situations, such as, you know, addiction. I can tell you when I started, addiction was viewed as people are scumbags that are on drugs. There's no value. They chose to do that. And I think we're starting to see now, and obviously the last few years, that the opioid crisis and just in general, that drug addiction is a disease, and it's something that there are options to treat people. And, you know, you can be part of that resource where it was like an inconvenience. Oh, I've got to go deal with this drug addict again. Well, that's part of your job. And that's an opportunity. You may have to meet that person in your area 20, 30, 40 times. But you know, if they're going through something, as long as it's not a fatal situation with someone or encounter, it's an opportunity to provide that resource. And that's what your job is. It, again, that lock up the bad guys mentality, you can't arrest your way out of the opioid crisis. It's not something you can do. It's not just about locking up people that are on drugs. Obviously, if there's crimes committed, that's a different situation. But like, that's just one example of officers are going to be providing resources. Officers are people that you can trust. I think it's less about jumping out and surprising people and more about coming up with ways to build bridges to fix problems versus just arrest and almost look like you're occupying a neighborhood, which is not the process to fix things.
You know, Chris, I'm thinking about this kind of in my really narrow mindset in this, because when I hired on, you looked a certain way. If you grew a mustache, you cut at the corner of the mouth, your hair was cut a certain way. From your perspective, what is it that qualifies someone for police work today and what doesn't? Because the old days of saying, did you smoke marijuana once are long gone.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it's a great question. And I think that this is one of the questions that, as you see, not only in the context of consent decree situations, but as communities are reviewing the, as a sort of a larger racial and social equity lens on practices around policing in their communities, it's easy to look at things like use of force policies. And that's the first place where most agencies are scrutinized. But getting to the specifics of the hiring process and why disqualifications have occurred and why steps in the process are prolonged the way they do, this really gets at the sort of the crux of the issue that for many years, what was assumed to be okay has no, in many cases, to Justin's point, no real defensible position and justification why we are doing it this way. Well, it's because somebody said that this is the thing to do and nobody's ever changed for the last 40 years. And that really is sort of one of the challenges here, where because you didn't fit what was considered to be the profile of a good cop in 1979, really great year because that was my birth year. So
that's kind of mean spirited.
So great year for both of us, Mike. But what passed for fitting the profile of policing relative to community expectations, in large part, has not really been reviewed and scrutinized in any meaningful way. In the process, has been codified as policy without any real reason and justification that's meaningful in contemporary society. And so that has marginalized, in many cases, qualified individuals who come from more diverse backgrounds, who have faced challenges that, in many cases, what the standard profile of what a good police officer should look like, they've never had to face in their life. And so because they've never had to face it, they fit the profile, but other qualified candidates who may be more representative of the community that they're looking to police in and have dealt with challenges that are more complicated and were potentially disqualifying issues in their backgrounds, those people are being excluded, and for no good reason other than there is policy that got codified and from someone's decision that is outdated. And so that policy review process is now becoming an increasingly important part of many of the racial and social equity initiatives that are happening in municipalities. That is really one of the more positive aspects, I think, of reevaluating and ensuring that our modern police officers are going to look like the communities that they're policing.
So, Justin, as you walk me through an overview of the police exam prep program, and we think about what officer fits and what doesn't, Give me some kind of a feel of how they move into the program and start to take advantage of your resources.
So we started as we do everything kind of a la carte. We started having very large on year one written prep classes, because to everybody, the start of the process is the written exam. So they figured if I pass that written exam, I got this. And I had a lot of success teaching a system that I developed out of necessity to pass, because I wasn't doing well on these exams. I was a decent college student, but I couldn't pass these exams up here. So I developed a system. I would teach the class. The average grades come back. People would get 90s. But I noticed very quickly a lot of these kids weren't getting hired, whether it was physical agility, whether it was background, interview, whatever. So immediately I stretch it into a constant mentoring program. So how someone would get involved is, you know, a lot of my folks come through either referrals from people that I know or people that have come through our website, or they come through social media, and they'll just join our group. Our group has been running for almost 5 years now, and it's every week we meet physically, and then we meet digitally a few times during the week. But they'll come to what we call our roll call. And it's basically a system where, you know, every week we have something different planned. A lot of the root of the program is physical fitness. But we do a lot of stuff with written prep. The program has evolved into doing stuff with ground fighting. And that's because over time I'd prepare these candidates. They'd spend a year with us, year and a half. And then the first time they were ever in any type of physical altercation, because that's never going to leave police work, despite the fact that people may want us to not ever physically touch anyone, that's never going away. So these kids would have never been involved in a physical fight. So I said, if we've got this time with them, we need to utilize the instructors that we have in our network to start to get these kids comfortable. So every third week, we'll start to do stuff with defensive tactics. We do a lot of stuff. You know, if I say the program is half physical, or we'll say like 30% physical, another large part of the program is community engagement. And it's been a lifeblood of my career. I've made it a point to be in places that I probably wouldn't fit, but I knew it was important working in a city in an urban environment with Black people, Hispanic people, all different religions, cultures. I needed to get myself immersed in that to effectively try to do my best to understand. So when I started this program, I needed these candidates to be around victims. I needed them to be around and not just say, well, I went to an event and I volunteered with victims twice, so that makes me someone who understands victims. That's bullcrap. It's something that they have to commit to this. So we'll do. So for example, we're going with a group called Rock the Peace. It's a community grassroots group, and their family members, all the people that are part of this nonprofit have experience some type of homicide or some type of loss from loved ones. And they're a very strong group of people, and they're having what they call a cold case walk. And we're going to one of the toughest neighborhoods of the city, and my team is going, our students are going with my call, my team, and we're going to be there this weekend volunteering and being part of this walk. But that won't be the only time we work with Rock the Peace. We've had numerous other events with them. We do a lot with homeless. We serve meals to homeless. We're embedded big time with the people that are the actual people we're going to be serving. And we're going in the direction, we've been going in the direction that policing is going. Now, truthfully, I did this because I believe in it. And I think it's important for these candidates to experience this. And again, I stress, it is my commitment for them each week is about 5.5 hours. That's a really good number. An hour and a half on the weekends, because this is not a police academy. An hour and a half on the weekends, and then the other hours, they'll have to put in their goals and their wins in this group digitally, and then be an hour or two volunteering. But I did this because I believe in it, and I know they need it, and it'll help them. It'll also make them attractive candidates to law enforcement agencies, because you got to have something in it for you. And I know when an agency sees someone, they won't not like that they did these things, whether it's victims of sex assault or whatever the situation is, they're involved. But what actually started happening, as you know, I'd say after year one of making it such a big part of the police exam career prep program, is I started losing a lot of candidates in the group who didn't buy into that and didn't like it. And I started saying to myself, you know what? That makes a lot of sense, because they're not. I use the reference, the John Wick reference, the character John Wick, right? Law enforcement agencies, many of them are still trying to recruit and find John Wick and pop him in their departments. But that's not what law enforcement needs right now. They need people that can physically handle themselves and take care of situations, but they need them a lot more good with their mouth, being empathetic, being able to speak to people, being able to calm situations down and not belittle people or, again, occupy neighborhoods. They need you to be part of the, you know, a guardian versus a warrior. And that's what we're looking for, one of the byproducts of that demand for engagement. And I've had people say to me, Mike, well, if you're making them volunteer, then what kind of a volunteer? Well, you know what? You make someone volunteer for about 2 years. Trust me, they start to get it after 2 years.
So, Justin, let's say I live 300 miles away. I'm not a Rochester resident, but I want to participate in the program. Are you spun up to the point that I can participate, or where are you?
We're not there yet. We're not spun up to that point. I'm lucky that the program itself, we're starting to bring in people. We want to bring in people to actually start to operate it so that we, myself and Gina, can start to focus on making this program something that we could start to help agencies put together in their department. So we're not at that level yet. I'd like to think that in the next year or so, that is something we could do. We've had about a little over 60 hires in the time that we started this program. And again, my job, my full-time job, my day job is a police officer still. So this is something I do when I'm not working, but it really starts to consume you. These kids that are in this class, you develop a personal attachment to them because they're fighting to do something that a lot of people think they can't do. And many of them have been rejected out of processes and they continue to fight. I just had a person that was hired, an Hispanic male, that was rejected twice. You know, this kid is just got the heart of gold, physically tough. He lost 60 pounds in 2.5 years, deeply, deeply embedded in his community, has taught other kids in the class to speak English that were Spanish speaking. He rose from a sergeant to our class to class lieutenant. Just physically pushing people. His engagement is unreal. He's the kind of kid that I would hire as a sergeant where I work. If I had the ability to do that, I would hire him in a heartbeat. And you know, what's really crazy to me about as I dig deep into this process and I've heard these stories and you know, I help these kids is that how this process, the background process for most part is like 10 phone calls. Maybe they'll call a couple of your ex-girlfriends or boyfriends. They'll go to your grammar school, your high school. They'll check your driving record or whatever. And then that's kind of it, right? You'll do your polygraph. You'll do your psych exam. But like you're really taking a snapshot, kind of like a draft. I like to equate a lot of things to like sports. It's really a crapshoot though. Like you'll hear these NFL analysts, Mel Kiper and them talk about how this guy's a lock and this is a lock. And then you go back and write. I mean, it's kind of a crapshoot. It amazes me that we haven't got here yet, but I like to hedge my bets. So I will spend, you know, a year, two. I've had a person recently get hired by the New York State Troopers that was with me for 3 years. So I've got this information and collect this data and have a chance to watch this person over time because you can fake it for a couple of weeks. You could fake it for a month. You could probably even fake it for 6 months, but you're not going to fake it for a year or two. When you're under this stress, you're being held to this standard, right? You're watching people on our team get hired. And you're like, I sweat alongside this guy week after week. He started just like me and now he's a police officer. So you're feeding into all that culture because culture is a big thing. Whether it's in a police agency or whether it's getting there to prepare. So these group of kids, they really keep each other in line too. As much as the administrators in our group do, the kids themselves keep that team atmosphere going.
Chris, I'm going to put this one in your lap. I mean, how exciting would this be if you had on the hat of a commander or the hiring person for a police department to have a choice between somebody who can run the mile and a half in 11 minutes and walk on, or somebody who actually spent 2 years prepping and going through and test driving?
Yeah, of course, right? I mean, Justin is helping to mold the future candidates, future policing candidates and desired candidate today. But I think the thing that's even, you know, more impressive than the work that he's done with the individuals that he has directly mentored is the model that this represents for re-envisioning what the culture and professionalism of policing looks like. I mean, I heard a lot of words from Justin around mentorship and culture and service. And where we're at in the national conversation is really around policy questions. What is the policy around de-escalation? What is the policy around duty to intervene? Well, none of those things, just because we have a policy doesn't mean that people act on them. And acting on policy starts with compassion. And in many cases, that's a fundamental strength of the culture that the police exam career prep program is creating in all of these candidates. And so what Justin is doing in this program is very impressive. I think it serves, though, as a larger model for re-envisioning what the police hiring process can look like to develop a culture of future employees and future sworn officers that is going to stand the level of modern scrutiny that exists in policing.
Justin, biggest challenge you've faced and major successes?
Biggest challenge was when we started, a lot of agencies did not, I think they felt like we were trying to steal the thunder or we're getting in the way of police recruitment units. But I could see the steady decline and the disconnect between the police hiring process and recruitment. Our sole purpose is to help agencies, whatever agencies, find more qualified candidates and help them pass these measurable tests. I think a lot of our county here, Monroe County, and Sheriff Todd Baxter has been really supportive. And over time, we've developed a really good relationship with him, and we've had a lot of successful stories come out of our program and working in his agency, both on the road, in the courts, in the jail, and a lot of the towns here locally, Irondequoit PD, with Chief Alan Laird, and a few others, the University of Rochester Public Safety with Dana Perrin and that group has hired a lot of our kids. So, you know, was really getting through some of this old school mentality. And I call it old school. And keep in mind, my stepfather was a police officer, and so was my grandfather. So I have great respect for the history of policing and this old school mentality. Someday, what I'm thinking will be considered old school. I understand that. I get that. Yeah, I have a 10-year-old son, so I'm sure I'm old school already. But really was getting through that. The fact that we were not a threat and that we were trying to help find good people. And it's obviously that we hit a nerve and that we were needed because, you know, as we grew, more and more people reached out and wanted help. So it's gotten better in most agencies. I think, you know, the biggest challenge though, too, is taking that next step. It's taking the program that we've created and the culture that we've built and, you know, this idea of developing a candidate. I think the thought process is let's take some 19-year-old kids and let's try to get him ready to become a police officer when he can take the test. Well, I've got a fair share of 19-year-olds, but I've also got a lot of 29, 30, and 35-year-olds. I've got people looking for a second career, they've always wanted to do this, right? Perhaps they're one of these casualties from the hiring process that I discussed that were treated like complete crap by a police agency. And they're giving it one last shot or they're giving it another shot and they had nobody to guide them. And that's what we do. So it isn't always the kids that we necessarily think of, like people want to be cops. There are people that are adults that are in these communities that are in this area that are around the country that want to get into policing, but just have heard so much bad stuff about the process and really don't know where to begin. And that's what we do. We not only get them to begin, but we really hold their hand through the process. You know what? The word holding hand might have been looked upon. I can think in the circles of some of my friends, you got to have your hand held. But the bottom line is things have changed, right? And that's one of the biggest challenges of law enforcement is just really slow to adapt to change. So for example, Chris is a phenomenal analyst and it's just a professional all the way. And I've always known him to be like that. And I know I'm sure you are aware of that, but I'll just use him as an example. I remember, you know, we had crossed paths a bunch of times and worked together numerous times when I met him and very early on in my career. But I remember even the things that he was doing was considered like, well, what do we need to do that for? Well, what's the purpose of that? And I mean, only till recently have I noticed that people are starting to like really understand that, like, listen, analysts are not, civilian analysts are not an enemy, right? They're not some outside. And this, again, this comes to the culture of the police agency, the types of people and understanding resources. And this is, again, the types of people that you're attracting to the job. You wanted to talk about like success stories. I've had a bunch. And one of the things about our group, and I talk about that real engagement. And I've got people that are just as passionate that are police officers and civilians that are part of this team. It has to be like that. You have to genuinely want to root for these people. And you know, sometimes they don't make it. Sometimes they have a change of heart. Sometimes they're maybe not being truthful about who they are, or they have a change of heart that they just don't want to be in this profession. And that's okay. One of our main things is that we don't chase people. If they don't want it, it's probably good that they're quitting now versus us getting them to the doorstep of a law enforcement agency, us saying, hey, this is a solid person. We watched them for a year and a half. We watched them for 2 years, only to have them lay a big egg when they get there. Again, it's talking about the draft. I'd rather have all this time to get their measurables, kind of like you talk about the NFL combine. This is like a 2-year NFL combine where you're just watching a person and really not just physically testing them, but testing them in all the areas that they're going to be experiencing. Even to the point where we'll videotape, they're being videotaped constantly, only because you're being videotaped constantly with your body camera at work. There's always cameras, a lot of public speaking, a lot of mental health training, really any topic that is current in law enforcement, they're being immersed in it. And I even discuss some of the resistance that they may feel that I felt for most of my career in regard to that guardian mentality. And I taught them to seek out people that are like them and don't feel shamed because you feel that your purpose is to be a guardian and to empathize with people. And you don't feel your purpose is to arrest away all your problems and that you don't feel like it's us versus them. That is how a police department is going to lose. When you have an us versus them mentality, that is incorrect. We work for the people. That's it. We work for the people. And Chris hit it on, you know, you want your agency to reflect what a community wants. And it isn't always just, you know, we want the racial breakdown. We want the, you know, we want all those important, the gender breakdown, but you also want the mental side of it. Being a white male, you want to make sure that, you know, I may not have grown up the way other folks have grown up, right? But that doesn't mean I can't be empathetic to the fact that there's other ways to live. And just because you're not familiar with it doesn't mean it doesn't make it wrong. And that goes back to the hiring process, right? If I grew up on a farm and now I'm, which again, there's nothing wrong growing up on a farm, but now I'm going to be passing judgment on people who grew up in poverty around gunshots and say, you're not good enough to serve in an urban environment. We can't trust you. Really? Because there's a major trust breakdown between a lot of urban law enforcement agencies and the community they serve. So it's kind of backwards. Success stories, I could talk all night about them, but a couple popped to my mind, and they're two females that have now been hired, both by College University Police. But one, you know, when I got deeper and deeper talking with this girl, and she would come to class, and she would be engaged, and she had been kicked out of two hiring processes. She wasn't good enough, right? And I, you know, we really had to break through some things. And I'm no Dr. Phil, right? But I want to understand what these kids, so what I could figure out, is this something we can get over? Is it more of a mental block or is it really a physical limitation? What is the thing? And, you know, we have, again, we have a bunch of coaches that will talk. And ultimately, I really wanted to learn her life story. And basically, her story starts with her parents defecting from Cuba on a raft and showing up in Miami. And I think around 95. So she's about 1 year old coming over on a raft from Cuba, right? This girl lived in complete poverty growing up, right? Her family did the best that they could. Her dad worked multiple jobs, but she did the, but her dream was to always be in law enforcement, right? And she did not have a good, real good shake at her life, but she didn't make excuses. She put herself through like a, she's part of a local BOCES program here for criminal justice prep, but there's a lot of casualties to those programs. Great programs to reach out to a kid when you're 16, 17, but what happens when they're 18, 19, and 20? And we all been there before, right? That's when the real distraction starts. What do we do with them What pipeline do we have set up from when that happens? That's where our group comes in. But anyways, this girl has a child young, which is something that we see. It's very common. She got pregnant in high school. You know, despite her efforts to stay on the straight and narrow, she made some bad choices. I'm sure she loves being a mom, but obviously being a teen pregnancy was not her goal, right? But she continued to push, continued to work multiple jobs, and then she got rejected out of a couple law enforcement agencies. She was told she wasn't good enough. When I met her, she wanted to quit, right? There was a couple times when she was in our group, she wanted to quit. Today, she's working as a university police officer, right? So just
a major accomplishment and something to be so proud of. And I'll tell you, I mean, Chris, it's the absolute enthusiasm that Justin has is amazing. Why is it taking somebody on the private side to figure this out, Chris, and government hasn't figured it out yet?
You know, I think that's going to be changing fast, Mike. I think what's exciting about the work that Justin and Gina and their team have done is this really represents probably the path forward that many organizations are going to incorporate into their hiring process, that the mentorship work and the service orientation and the establishment of a culture around compassion and service, in addition to the essential skills that you need to be an effective police officer, I think are just increasingly going to be part of what a modern recruitment structure looks like. And that's exciting because in the work that this team has done, it really represents a path forward for many organizations who are currently struggling to figure out, we've been challenged. How do we do better? There is a path forward. And I think that police exam career prep really represents what right can look like in that regard.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, our time is spent, but Justin, we cannot not continue to learn more about your organization. How can people find out more about you and continue to learn?
Okay. They go to our website, policeexamcareerprep.com. But really the best way to watch, we're all over Instagram at Police Exam Career Prep. We're all over Twitter. We're all over Facebook. We call it my journey to the badge because it really is a journey to the badge. And really, it's like a look at these kids' lives for the year or 2 years that they're hiring. So you could really watch a lot of these kids go through the different pieces that we're putting them through weekly, and you can watch what we do by watching social media at policeexamcareerprep.com and our Police Exam Career Prep social.
And you know, you left me with something that I think has changed my life, and that is that while we always will need a warrior, we need to have that evolve into guardians who still have the capability to be a warrior when the time comes. I just hope that you enjoy the greatest amount of success, not just for you, Justin, and your team, but because when you are successful, that means kids who maybe otherwise would never have blessed this profession that I love so much would never be able to get out on the street and protect and serve, something that we hold dear as police officers, that statement to protect and serve. So best wishes to you. And from all of us at Profiling Evil, folks, please make sure you check out the web links. We're going to put them below to Justin's organization. To my good friend, Chris, thanks so much for jumping in, Chris. I hope you'll come back. One thing that's been really nice tonight is that with three of us, put a nickel in and we could talk for hours and hours. And we're really blessed that way. But thanks so much and have a great evening.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is Truth Finder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give Truth Finder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing, but you got to click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time.